Welcome to Healthcare Rounds, the podcast serving you the ins and outs of health policy and business topics, as well as our take on the rapidly evolving healthcare delivery ecosystem. I'm John Marchica, founder and CEO of Darwin Research Group and host of this podcast. To learn more about us, go to darwinresearch.com.
In this episode, John welcomes to the show Dr. Suzanne Shugg, the CEO and co-founder of Teleplus Healthcare. Suzanne explains how she is accomplishing personalized and personable healthcare between doctors and their patients, ironically, through remote telemedicine efforts. She goes into depth about the hurdles of healthcare today and how telehealth fits perfectly in it to streamline patient care, especially for chronic care conditions.
So I did my homework. You wear many hats. You're the CEO of Teleplus Healthcare. You lead several other ventures. You're a professor in the School of Nursing at Rutgers, which is where I believe you earned your doctorate.
Correct.
And you've traveled the world over implementing healthcare initiatives. And I'm sure we can get to all of that, but I'd just like to start off with let's get a working definition of telemedicine. How would you describe telemedicine?
So it's difficult. I mean, people define telehealth and telemedicine as different things. So how I think of telehealth is having a provider speak with the patient over the phone or by secure email. Telemedicine, I tend to think of, you know, that the provider speaking to the patient or engaging with the patient over a video conference that's HIPAA compliant. So that's how I distinguish it in my brain. Just to add another layer, we also do what we call tele-education as well, which is like education by virtual reality and by platform as well. So, I mean, there's lots of different interesting things that you can do via phone, tablet, computer, and whatnot.
And then, of course, there are the different segments like telebehavioral health. Is that the right term?
Well, yeah. There's telebehavioral health, which is not only can you do visits, but you can also do screening. You can do emergency visits. I've worked with several hospitals where they do emergency health by telemedicine. So they'll call in a neurologist, especially if they're in a rural area, if someone's having a stroke, and they'll call in a neurologist to take a look and actually assess the patient, and they'll have a nurse on the other side helping you assess it. You can also put a kiosk in a senior center and then have different specialists see the patient there as well. So there's lots of different applications, and it's not only in rural areas that it can be utilized. It can be utilized specifically for chronic care and also transition care, because I think that's where the biggest need is right now, especially with what I call the silver tsunami, which is all the baby boomers that are aging. And we're living longer, so we have tons of chronic care issues.
So why has it seemed, certainly in the last 5 to 10 years, that health systems are moving or expanding their telehealth and telemedicine initiatives? Why is that?
I think it's simple. You know, you have the reason why telehealth is expanding is because you have someone who goes into the ER, and when they enter the ER just to get an x-ray and to get evaluated, it's $3,000. Whereas and I'm most familiar with like sleep apnea, where, you know, you have people on diuretics and they gain a couple pounds, you can actually just increase their diuretic and get them out of failure right over the phone. So number one, you know, you go to the hospital, these people go to the hospital, they get put out. They don't want to be there. Their family members then have to take the day off from work. It's very expensive for them and their health insurance. While they can just, you know, talk to a provider and the provider can manage them much more efficiently and effectively at home, and the patients are much happier. The percentage of satisfaction with these telehealth programs are usually between 93 and 98%. Because the patients actually have someone to connect to that are actually listening to them. So it actually, ironically, allows patients and providers to give much better care and become much closer than if it's just, you know, seeing a patient for 5, 10, 15 minutes in the office, because they're not able to really connect with that patient.
Sure, that makes sense. So we originally connected through Teleplus. So tell me about your organization, what it is that you do, what you're striving for, and maybe some of the unique problems that your technology solves.
Sure, absolutely. So Teleplus Healthcare is exactly what it is. It's TelePlus, so it's telemedicine plus a whole bunch of other stuff. So, I mean, what we're really striving to care for, what we're really striving to accomplish is we want to make healthcare more personal. We want to make sure that the patients are much more connected with their providers. We want to make sure that we're giving good care. There's a huge rate right now of not only patients can't get a hold of their providers and they don't get good care, but also providers are being burnt out too. And one of the reasons why providers are being burnt out is because they're spending way too much time on the EMR and they're calling patients and doing a lot of extra things all the time and not getting paid for it. So they're just spending lots and lots of hours in the office and they're just getting burnt out. So one of the things we focus on is actually streamlining care by specifically having questions and algorithms for people in specific chronic care conditions like congestive heart failure, like COPD, diabetes. So these questions are meant to sort of steer the person into, hey, how are you feeling today? Did you gain weight? Are you short of breath? So specific questions towards their disease pattern. And what that does is it allows the provider to be able to put them into buckets. And I don't mean to be crude and say, you know, non-personal and say, you know, we're putting them into a red, yellow, and green bucket. But what that allows us to do is to be able to shift care to people that really need it and allow us to get to them quicker. So we're trying to tackle the disease states or the specialty care that not many other want to because it's difficult. So stuff like sleep apnea, which is extremely difficult to tackle. Number one is not a lot of people are trained in sleep apnea. Number two is it doesn't pay well. So we're working with University of Pennsylvania on that front. We're also working with Johns Hopkins on obesity. Obesity, as everybody knows, is a huge problem, but no one wants to tackle it because there's lots of different aspects of it. And it's very, very complex in order to solve some of the obesity crisis. So we're tackling not just the chronic care and the transition care, but we're trying to tackle the bigger problems. And we're actually trying to do the right thing for both the patients and providers.
So operationally, walk me through what that looks like. And maybe we can use congestive heart failure as a first example. Are you developing an app that then gets implemented physician office by physician office? Do you have care managers, so more of a human touch? I'd like to understand more of the details of how you operationalize what you do.
Sure, absolutely. So what we're doing is we're actually working with a cardiology group called NJ Cardiology Associates, New Jersey Cardiology Associates, which works out of St. Barnabas. And what we've actually done is go into their office and we're training their staff, particularly one or two nurses, to help manage these chronic care patients under the guidance of nurse practitioners and physicians. And so basically what we've created is an application that can either sit on phones or tablets or computers. So it's just an icon that you sort of download. With this particular case, since it's an older population that we're dealing with, we've given them tablets that are locked down. In other words, they cannot go on Wi-Fi or do other things. Our idea is to make it as simple as possible. So, you know, they hit a red or green button. That's about the extent of it. And then one of the other things is that they take a weight and they also take a blood pressure. And the blood pressure syncs with the cuff once they push a button. So it's very, very user-friendly. It's written in a way where people can understand it, even if they're at a third grade level. And it's not a higher IT level. So, you know, one of the other problems with senior care or when you're dealing with seniors is that they have a difficult time with technology. So we've done that, and then we've provided them with an IT support gentleman to sort of walk them through in a training manual so they can call our IT support anytime that they want. And basically what they do is they onboard these patients. We actually have a consent form that they can sign right online when they come in and meet with the nurse practitioner. And they get onboarded right to it. And so what that allows the providers to do is every day when the patients answer their questionnaire, we usually tell them between 6 and 9 a.m. The nurse checks it at 10. So they're usually spending about 20 to 30 minutes looking at the dashboard. They get to see all their patients that way, and they get to see who's in the red zone, who's in the yellow zone, who's in the green zone, who hasn't answered, and then who's got other questions or issues. So it puts them into boxes so that these providers can easily see who they need to address right away, and they can get paid for every single one of these patients on a monthly basis, and they get paid by the amount of care they give. So with the new chronic care guidelines and congestive heart failure is one of these conditions that fall into it. There's many conditions, but congestive heart failure is one of these conditions. And so they get paid by month, per patient, per month. Plus, they also get a fee for using a blood pressure cuff. And if they're dealing with more complex patients, then they get additional funding. And we keep track of the time that is spent on our platform, as well as the time that they are typing into the keystrokes into the computer. Plus, you can add additional time if you're actually consulting with other providers or setting up other services. So we track all of that, and then we're able to use that for billing purposes. And then if your electronic medical record does not, what we call shake hands, meaning exchange data with other systems, then you can export the file and then put it into your EMR that way. You can have an in-between port, meaning a database that dumps into another database, because some of the EMRs do not allow that. Certain functions of Cerner and Epic don't allow that, but most of the EMRs, like Athena and other things, you can actually program through an API and you can communicate right with them.
So are you actually giving patients take a scale and a blood pressure cuff and that kind of equipment home with them as part of the onboarding process?
Yes. So the way we've set it up with this particular group, and we can do it in several different ways. So if patients just want to communicate on their phone and use their own equipment, that's fine. But the way we've set it up with this particular group is that, yes, they get a scale, they get a cuff, and they get a tablet right at the initiation of the program, and that's included in the price of the program. And then from there, what happens is we've been able to partner with Samsung, Walgreens, and some of the other companies. But what that allows us to do is that we can program so that the provider only gets one blood pressure per day, so it locks it out. And then we've been able to program Samsung so they're not allowing them to go on different sites. So what we're trying to avoid is getting viruses and other things from the tablet. This allows us to control a lot of things, and we can remote control the tablet in case there's a problem or troubleshoot it. So it sort of takes the complexity out of it. So it's easier to do on a tablet, but we want to be more versatile, and we want to keep the cost down as much as possible for people. So we're trying to do it on many different platforms, but the tablet allows us to control it as much as possible.
So when you said that they get paid for the time that they're providing care, who is paying them? Are you paying them? And then is there a grant? I'm just trying to understand the funding mechanism behind it.
So who's paying the providers? That's the question?
Yes.
So Medicare, Medicaid, and now insurance companies are. So Medicare and Medicaid through chronic care. So if you have one or two chronic care conditions, you'll get paid per patient per month to manage them. And so what we've come up with is specific logarithms for those conditions. So like diabetes, if their blood sugar goes above a certain level, then they fall into a certain box. If they are shaky or they're hypoglycemic or have certain symptoms, they fall into a specific box. What you're doing in essence is you're managing these people and you're seeing these people that that are being rehospitalized, and you're saying, okay, well, let's take this population that's a really high-risk population, or even the general population that doesn't feel well on a daily basis, and you're saying, okay, let's mitigate what their symptoms are and their medical problems are, and let's get ahead of it. Let's address it right when it happens rather than having these people go into the emergency room. And what it ends up doing in the long run is, even though you're paying per patient per month for this, it actually saves our country millions and millions of dollars, because you're getting them before they end up in the ER. And it also saves the patients a trip to the ER, family from taking the days off, people from getting sicker. And the idea of this is to prevent people from getting that acute exacerbation. So you can head off diseases before they get to a point where they need to be hospitalized. And that's the idea, especially since you have so many people living with so many different chronic diseases these days.
So have you been able to quantify, I understand in theory that if you're able to head some of these problems off at the pass, you can prevent hospitalizations or ER use. But have you looked at whether it's sleep apnea or heart failure or obesity with any of these programs and been able to quantify the effect of telemedicine and telehealth?
Well, absolutely. I mean, so we're relatively new at this, but even if you just look at emergency visits, some of the telemedicine companies that have been around a lot longer, like Teladoc and MDLive, I mean, they save the insurance companies millions of dollars. They cut their spending down by more than 50%. And that's just emergency medicine. That's not even chronic care. That's not even mental illness on top of that. So because you're just heading off that emergency room. So people who have like a acute sinusitis or they have a bronchitis, instead of going to the emergency room in the middle of the night, they make a phone call to this doctor and the doctor prescribes them an antibiotic. What's different about us is we're, yes, incorporating the acute care, but what we're really trying to do is make a connection between that person's existing doctor and the patients and make it a stronger connection, a stronger bond, and make sure that the providers take ownership for their patients and the patients know their physicians and providers, because we think that's really important going forward, you know, in healthcare. I think healthcare has become completely impersonal, and it's really gone in the wrong direction. So I actually think that telemedicine, as odd as it sounds, that telemedicine actually make medicine much more personable again and actually get rid of some of this burnout.
Right. So you're talking about issues with physician burnout, and that actually leads into my next question. And that is,
sure.
So what possessed you to start down this path? You've had a circuitous path in healthcare, done some interesting work, but why start, why run this company? Why grow this company? What's driving you?
I know it's a lot of work. I'm really tired. I started out, and many people know my background. I started out as a nurse in open heart surgery and cardiac step down. So, you know, one of the things I actually really noticed is that people kept coming back over and over again. So, you know, I said, I need to make more of a difference. And I think I can make more of a difference. So I went back and became a nurse practitioner. And then the same thing happened. And then I went back and got my doctorate. And then the same thing happened. I went back and became a clinical lipid specialist. And I said, you know, I think we need a bigger platform. So, and as a clinician, you get to see what's going on, what's wrong. And you don't even get to see it from a patient standpoint. But then I had a number of different health issues with my family and myself. So then you start to see it from a patient standpoint, and it's extremely scary. I mean, as a patient standpoint, you know, when you can't get care, even when you know people, and it's really frustrating. So, you know, going through all these sort of things and, you know, growing up in sort of the healthcare system, you come to realize that there's a lot of different problems. And every country, I've worked in several different countries, every country has their own problem, by all means. But in the United States, we spend more money on healthcare than any other country. And we seem to have a huge amount of money spent on wasted healthcare. And our patients are more dissatisfied than they've ever been. And not only that, as our providers and physicians are aging and getting burnt out. So that there's many different reasons for that. It's multi-layered, it's mostly multifaceted. But I think a lot of it's the way our healthcare system is run and our reimbursement system. You know, I also worked for a partially self-funded insurance company, so I saw both sides of it. But, you know, as a provider, you see that providers are spending more and more time on the EMR, and they're just frustrated by the lack of ability to spend time with their patients, actually treat their patients. So it's becoming very apparent, especially in our internal medicine doctors who are getting killed because their reimbursement is way down and they're just spending more and more time in the office.
So you see your solution as being one way to improve the connection. Obviously, you're not reducing the time spent with the EHRs, but you see your solution as being one way to improve that patient-doctor relationship.
So I do. I do think that we also actually aid in decreasing the time in EMRs. The other thing that we do is, especially in internal medicine practice, we can actually double their income by them managing chronic care patients. So, and I don't say that lightly. I mean, depends upon the reimbursement and how many patients you have in chronic care. But if you take the national average of internal medicine doctors, they make $170,000. You could easily double their, not easily, but you could double their income by incorporating chronic care. And it's not that difficult to do. So Number one, I think how we decrease the amount of time in the EMR is that when you're managing chronic care, all of this stuff is in buckets that your nurses are putting in every day. Their questions are being answered, their blood pressure is being entered, their weight is being entered. And then you have comment sections where the nurse can write in comments as to what's going on with their patient. At the end of the month, all that gets downloaded into a PDF, and then we actually can take the conversations from Zoom, which is the platform we use, we've integrated into our platform, but you can actually download that as a PDF. So we're actually, you can export that and actually put it in your EMR, or if your EMR is able to communicate with our platform, because some EMRs communicate, some don't, then you can actually pull the data right into the platform. So in some ways, we actually have helped the providers spend a lot less time on the EMR. As far as communicating with patients, your patients really like it, because if they're sick, they actually get care right away, which is instead of calling the office and saying, okay, he'll call you back. And at the end of the day, when you're done seeing all your patients, then you're making your phone calls. So this patient has sat and waited the entire day for you to make a phone call back, or they're just told to go to the ER because the doctor can't handle it.
So you talked about your inspiration. Is there any moment in time, just as a fellow entrepreneur, I like to hear these success stories and learn how people really get started. Was there a moment in time that you flipped the switch and said, I see the vision for this telehealth company and I see where I'm going to take it?
Yes. So how I even got into telemedicine is actually working for an insurance company. And so I always knew telemedicine was great. I've actually, you know, helped other practices go with telemedicine, but I never thought it was really my forte. And then I was the director of health and wellness for a partially self-funded insurance company. And I was like, this is crazy, all this money we're spending. And the patients don't like the care completely. So that's when it became really apparent that we really needed to implement telemedicine. And the other thing that became apparent is that at that point in time is people are not really doing it well. They're not doing it well. They're not managing specialty care. They're not managing chronic care well. And one of the reasons why is it's a lot of business people that are running these companies. And there's not a lot of healthcare individuals. There's not a lot of providers actually running these companies. So unless you're a provider and you're dealing, you know, with this every day, you don't really understand the complexity of our healthcare system. And so as a provider who's been basically on all different sides, a nurse practitioner, lipid specialist, insurance company, worked in hospital and clinic settings, you get an idea of what's going on. And I work with social workers and all that kind of good stuff all the time. So, you know, over the years, you start to figure things out. And if you're savvy, you're researching and figure out what exactly is going on with our healthcare system. So one of the things I also did after I finished my doctorate was did some of my postdoctorate work on the Obamacare. So really understanding the nuts and bolts of insurance.
And so from there, once you saw that opportunity, it's interesting the way that you put it, that a lot of the folks who are running these companies are business people, maybe some technology people, but not necessarily providers. So what was the process?
I mean, you need business, and you need business, and you need technology, by all means. Those are people that you, key organization people you need in your organization, but you need someone who has the vision to lead the company.
Absolutely. So, and I'm not discounting the business people. Of course, most of the people listening are. So where do you see, what's your vision for your organization over the next 3 to 5 years? What are you communicating to your folks? What do you see for the future?
That's a big question. It's a little bit scary. So if I was able to really move this company, you know, which I want to, I see managing chronic care through telemedicine almost exclusively through personalized pathways for each individual and for connection for each individual. So in other words, that patient has a connected provider and that provider is responsible for that patient. I really think that we need to go back to having providers have onus for their patients and patients really knowing their providers and trusting their providers, because I think a lot of this trust has been lost. That's number one, and you will see over the next 3 to 5 years much more technology being brought into telemedicine. I've been to the last couple trade shows with the HIMSS and the telemedicine companies. And what you're seeing now is that these questions, not only are they being done via telemedicine, but they're being asked by Alexa. And so these things are really going to the next level. You know, we've seen everything from robot nurses to different systems asking questions. Do I think we're there yet? Absolutely not. Do I think that's a little bit scary? Yeah, just because of the data collection. In other words, who's accessing this data? Especially in this time and age when we're trying to preserve HIPAA. And I think it's really important to be mindful of that.
So you mentioned the partnerships with the University of Pennsylvania and Johns Hopkins. So is creating either academic collaborations or partnering with large integrated health systems, is that in your immediate future?
Absolutely. So we actually just signed an 8-year exclusive relationship with the University of Pennsylvania Sleep Center for their sleep technology, just because they do it really well and they manage their patients very well. And then we're working with Johns Hopkins to work on an obesity incentive. One of the reasons why we're connecting with these organizations, number one, is they tend to do these things well. So we're trying not to reinvent the wheel. We're trying to be the best in the market. So why not recruit or work with the people that are already doing it well, but now take it to the next level and use technology to really reach the masses? Because no one's going to Johns Hopkins obesity clinic unless you're living in Maryland, right? Or you're not going to UPenn unless you live in Philadelphia. So they're not reaching the masses. Unfortunately, with sleep apnea, it unparalleled affects Asian people much more than the general population. So they're really affected by it. It's because of their genetic facial cranial structure. So they tend to have the back of their throat tends to close because of the way they're genetically structured. So their airway closes when they sleep. So it has to do with the jaw shifting backwards and closing off their airway. So it's much more prevalent in the Asian community. In the Caucasian community, it's prevalent because we're becoming more and more obese. So it's a huge problem and leads to lots of other issues, including diabetes and obesity and hypertension, atrial fibrillation, worsening congestive heart failure. So I can go on and on, depression. But so it's become a real big health crisis that people really are not addressing, and they really don't know about it. And one of the issues in the U.S. is that providers just don't get paid well for it. So there's not a lot of education. There's not a lot of people going into it. So UPenn has really, really put a lot of effort, and they have several different schools that work in collaboration with their sleep. So they have their behavioral health. They have their neurology. So they look at all different aspects, and we really like that approach, and we're really happy to work with them. They're very smart people. So we have them handle the clinical side, and we try to do the overall big vision side.
So this may sound like I'm getting into the weeds, but when you're talking about all these different conditions, I was thinking, because originally I was thinking that you have a sleep apnea program, a congestive heart failure program, almost as if these patients are in buckets. So what happens when you do have that patient with sleep apnea that is on diabetes medication, maybe working on their weight? So multiple chronic conditions, how does that get implemented in the physician's office?
So good question. It's very complex. So number one, you have to start with the thing that's causing the other issues. So if you have somebody with congestive heart failure and sleep apnea, let's just take two conditions first and then we can go into the third. But you know that sleep apnea makes congestive heart failure much worse. So you can't get their congestive heart failure under control until you get their sleep apnea under control. So that's one way to handle it. So you sort of hierarchy the conditions that are causing the other conditions. Now, granted, if someone has a sugar of 40, they're not going to live through the night. So it's just about hierarchy of needs. So what you do is you sort of do a hybrid program, you know, because you can't have somebody get asked. Most of our programs are anywhere from 4 to 8 questions. So you can have somebody with 3 different conditions ask 24 questions a day. So we have a hybrid program where we pull, okay, this is the most important question for diabetes, this is the most important question for congestive heart failure, and this is the most important question for COPD. So basically what we're trying to do is trying to personalize these systems for everybody. So it's exactly like you said. We've got these buckets, And these people are put in these buckets depending upon their conditions. And then we have this sort of free-for-all. So that's the great thing about technology is on our platform, you can actually just, not you guys, but our IT guys can determine what's important, what's not. So it's all about just turning something on or turning something off. It's much more complex than that, and I'm not an IT person, so I just leave it to them, but I say, this is what I want to do.
As we wrap up, is there anything that I should have asked you about that I didn't? Anything, any ground that we should have covered that I forgot?
I guess what drives me.
Yeah, so what drives you?
The pure desire to help people, to improve our healthcare and help people. Honestly, I mean, our company is really made up of really good individuals that really just want to help individuals and improve the healthcare system. And if we can do that even a little bit, I think we succeeded.
Well, it looks like you're making substantial headway. And I'd just like to thank you for taking the time to speak with me today. Suzanne, this has been a pleasure learning more about telemedicine, telehealth, and Teleplus Healthcare, your organization. I wish you the best.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I appreciate you having me on your show. I know you've got lots of guests, so I appreciate your time as well. It's great being able to have a platform to actually speak about what we're trying to accomplish. So thanks.
From all of us at Darwin Research Group, thanks for listening. Please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Healthcare Rounds. If you have a topic you'd like to see covered in a future episode, please email us at podcast@darwinresearch.com. And if you haven't already subscribed to our weekly strategic brief, go to darwinresearch.com and subscribe today. See you next round.